Hey everyone, this is Dina Jones, one of the founders of Joe Bean Roasters. At Joe Bean, our mission, Coffee That Lifts Everyone, is about giving selling power back to coffee farmers, as well as purchasing power into the hands of our customers. Through our network of farmers, we're able to bring you naturally grown, amazing coffee directly. Our long-term farming partners negotiate pricing based on cost of production, as well as quality of product, not on fluctuating, unpredictable market prices. This enables them to create thriving businesses with bright futures. And our customers get empowered knowing exactly who grows their coffee and how, as well as knowing they are a part of a new, sustainable, global coffee network. To try our coffee, go to JoeBeanRoasters.com and be sure to check out our Perpetual Joy coffee subscription to receive a rotating selection of single-origin coffee delivered right to your door. Thank you to all our Rochester friends who have supported us and our farming partners so wonderfully over the years. You are making a difference with every bag.
Welcome back to the show for another episode of Behind the Studio Door. I am your host, Molly Darling, along with my co-host, Christian Rivera.
I'm in a very calm mood today. So I think I'm just going to talk like this the whole episode. And maybe just try to make sure that you're relaxed, you know, sit back in your chair. You're going to, you know, continue working on what you're working on, you know, enjoy your life. Just think about being on a beach.
You've been cut off.
Okay. I was going to, you're right. You're right to do that. I was going to go on for a good 40 minutes.
and coming in clutch with the turning off the microphones, it's Chris Lindstrom.
I'm having fun with dials. What a delight. Who doesn't enjoy a good knob?
The button man. The button man, Mr. Strawberry is here. Mr. Buttons.
I chose to have you both on the podcast.
You did choose this, yes. You set yourself up for this madness.
We love it. Also on the show today, which I'm really excited to have, Davita Rogers, an amazing artist from Sierra Leone and Rochester and all the places. Thank you for coming on the show.
Thank you for having me.
Yeah.
Yay. Yay. I requested brilliant sound effects.
Brilliant.
So she brought in specifically someone to be in the background to applaud to every single thing that she's going to say.
That is my partner.
So just so you know, that's what this episode is going to be all about.
They do this on the regular.
This is what support truly sounds like, everybody. Pay attention.
Maybe we'll reveal the mystery of who that is later.
They'll have their own podcast.
Yeah. Uh-huh.
And we'll have someone to come clap for them.
I will be here.
Amazing.
Be like a pay it forward thing, like in the Starbucks line or something. Right. You pay someone's money.
You clap for the next
person. The next guest will come in and clap for the current guest.
I like that idea,
just
actually.
Just keep that going.
So how are you today, Davita? Tell me about your art and how you like to describe yourself in that way. And yeah, what's up?
I'm okay. Today I'm doing well. A little bit bored, but I've been fed and I've had some mimosas, so I'm like doing well.
Don't tell me you're bored, because I'm gonna amp it up
too
much.
Before I got here, now I'm kind of, you know, zen, I think. Yeah. Art wise, I am kind of, I think I recently started not describing myself as an artist, but that's only because I'm not as consistent as I think most people or most artists are. I feel like the frequency between work is kind of few. So maybe that's the reason why. But other than that, the kind of art I make is just kind of dependent on how I'm feeling. Mm-hmm. But I'm very into gore. I really like colors.
Mm-hmm.
I try to like bring those two things together. Mm-hmm. And that's pretty much like the basis of like all of my art.
Yeah. How was it? So how long were you in Sierra Leone? Like, tell me about like...
I was like born and raised.
Yeah. And how does that inform your practice? Like, how are those things connected?
You know, that's really interesting, because I feel like when you think someone from like Africa or West Africa making art, the art that I grew up seeing, or like the art that I know people from my side of the world make, is very it's very like a call back to home. It's very African proud, which I really like. But I don't make art like that. I'm very much like deviated from that. But I think that a lot of it is also informed by my experiences in Sierra Leone. So I think in essence, it is Sierra Leonean art because it's made by a Sierra Leonean. And it's made with my Sierra Leonean experiences in mind. So I think it's just, it just needs to find its place somewhere in there. And I know for a fact that there are other African artists that make art just like mine. And I just need to find them. I think I just need to find my people.
Is there a certain quality that makes your art from Sierra Leone, like that is through you, but also has some of that essence coming through, like a descriptive quality of it, or some, you know, anything that's borrowed perhaps?
A lot of my titles as well is directly borrowed from like either something I experienced while being in Sierra Leone, my Sierra Leonean upbringing, my Sierra Leonean parents. I think that is like one aspect. It might not be like directly correlated, but I think a lot of it is derived.
Right.
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah, that totally makes sense. It's and you haven't been in Rochester for very long, right?
No,
long have you been in Rochester, and what brought you here?
I've been here 2.5 years. I think August would probably make it 3 years. Tiwa, my partner, got into grad school here, and I got a job, and I just kind of like followed them here. And now I'm also in grad school, so I guess that's why I'm here.
That makes
and we'll be here until that entire journey is over.
Yeah. What's it been like? Because it's got to be a contrast, right? Being in Rochester versus Sierra Leone.
Oh, like, it's such a contrast.
Are there things in this experience of being here that have informed your work? Like, does your experience where you are inform your work also?
My location definitely matters. I spent most of my years being in America once I came from Sierra Leone in Maryland. And then I moved here. So like, this is a totally new environment for me. I think once I started showing work at the like Rochester, in the Rochester art spaces, then I started to think of Rochester in my work, specifically when I was doing Thought, like the first time and the second time. I like have Rochester in mind. And I feel like now being more involved in like the Rochester like art community, or like, going to people's shows and seeing what they're doing, and how like being from Rochester, like Erica was just here. She is a Rochesterian native. It really changes like my perspective on, I guess like the location and like how it informs your art. Because before then I'm like, I make the same kind of art everywhere I go. But now I'm like kind of seeing how if I do leave Rochester, I'm going to look back on like those thought pieces and remember that I made that because of Rochester and because I was in Rochester.
And because you were surviving the longest fucking winter.
It's the worst ones that I've experienced.
The long winter brings out the art in people.
It does.
Yeah. I was just looking up. It seems like PG County outside of Baltimore actually has a pretty high amount of Sierra Leone population.
That's literally where I'm from.
Yeah. So, I mean, I was just looking just to see like, oh, is there an infrastructure? Because what happens in New York State anyways is, you know, they'll have like, you know, refugee groups and they'll try to bring them all to one city. So like Utica has a lot of Bosnian population. Rochester's had a very quickly growing Nepalese population and Afghan population. Buffalo has a lot of Burmese. And it's actually raised the population of the city of Buffalo because of the Burmese population coming in. It seems like that's, you know, there's a, you know, big West African, you know, center outside of the DC, you know, Baltimore kind of area. Was that kind of a, did that help with the process when you came to the US for the first time, having a community around?
My family, my mom was already in PG County.
Okay.
So we had family in the area. We had family in Maryland in general. We had family in Bowie. We had family in Laurel. So we already had like kind of our own close-knit community in the greater like Sierra Leonean community. It was like a Sierra Leonean church that my mom would go to well. So that was kind of, the integration wasn't as rough, but outside of that, I had to go to school in PG County. Like I graduated from Duval High School and that was still very much like a culture shock to me. I don't think having, and even in my, school, the people that I ended up making friends with were, there were people from like other West African countries and like the Caribbean. I didn't have a ton of like Sierra Leonean friends. So it was not the same as like what I had just come from. So even though the transition was pretty, it was made easy by at least having like my community outside of school, it was still, it was not all, you know.
It's not easy. And it's never easy, but. Yeah, at least having that support structure is valuable. And I think that's, you know, having that, you know, for everybody coming in, that they have a community and a support system to find their comfort, find, you know, when the times are tough, finding that comfort. And sometimes art is a part of that, finding your voice in a different place.
So you mentioned gore and colors to make a hard pivot. I'm curious about that relationship to gore and colors, and if there are themes within that that are coming forward in your work, like are you focused on particular subjects, visuals, angles, like what are some common stuff coming
some
through
themes.
There?
You know, actually when I first started, color was not like, I would only use red like a lot because that was the only thing I was kind of focused on because I was only doing like blacks and reds. And then I started to do more color and I saw that the figures that I was painting, they stood out way more when they look like how they look. They're screaming, or they're, you know, their faces are, you know, kind of either just like completely scoured or, you know, they're in some type of way. But they have all these nice colors around them. I thought that was a really great like contrast. And so now I'm more focused on using as many colors as I can because I do enjoy it as well. Like I feel like using my pastels, like they're the only things I can actually do right now. Also because it's the only thing I have like time to really do. I think that's mostly like where I'm like going. So it's once I pick up the pastels, I see the colors that I want to use. I immediately go into like what I'm feeling that day or like what I want to show.
I mean, how might some of the gore imagery relate to some of how you're feeling? Like what stories are coming out from you into those pieces?
I think a lot of it is pain. I mean, as simple as like it may sound, I think all I want to kind of portray is I kind of want to just let it all out, kind of take it all out like piece by piece, experience by experience. I think once I do it, like when I made the piece about learning that my father had passed away, I was able to like confront that feeling that day because I don't talk about it like a lot. It was so cold in Rochester. It was like snowing like crazy. And I came outside and I was like waiting for my Uber and nobody was there, by the way. It was so weird because, you know, people are outside even in the snow and it was a school. Like I was working at like, you know, I was working for a lab and we were in one of the schools. And I came outside and like nobody was outside. There was no bus. There were no children.
Just quiet.
And I was just standing there by myself, just waiting for my Uber. And I'm like, I don't think I will ever be able to like express exactly what I was feeling in that moment when I was standing there until I made that piece. And it looked exactly like how I looked. It didn't look like me because it's this like thing with like big eyes and, you know, this face, and it's just a head and it's crying blood and it's just a single tear. Cause I didn't even have it in me to like burst out and cry. Like I waited until the Uber dropped me off. I got home, I got in the house and like I broke down. In that one moment, that tear was the only thing I shed. But how I was feeling inside, it was so large, it was indescribable. And I was not able to like express that to anyone, not even, you know, my partner, because that I tell them everything.
Yeah.
It was indescribable. And I made that piece of art and it looked exactly like it. And I saw it and I understood. And I'm like, yes, that is exactly what it was. And I think that I'm able to like do that for like different things, you know. It's not all pain, I guess. Yeah. Sometimes it's confusion. Sometimes it's regret. Sometimes it's, you know, sometimes it's happy.
I did want to like draw attention to one of the things that you said, like in passing, but it was really profound, where you just described this whole, all of these feelings and emotions that you felt in your body, right? And you didn't have the words for them. And then you said, I saw it and I knew. Like, it's like the beauty of art being a way to express, like squeeze out those feelings, put them somewhere where they're not in your body anymore, and then be able to look at it and be like, oh, that's what it is. Like, oh, and it's such a relief too. Is that how it feels for you when you're making work?
Yes, absolutely. And I think that is one of the reasons why I do not like letting go of my stuff. I don't think about like, except when I'm like super broke, I don't think about selling art at all. Like I think about if I am gonna sell things, I will make prints of them, because I have a very hard time letting go of stuff, because I know that I'm making it for myself. And when I see it, it's a very great reminder of exactly what it was. Even if like I don't look at it for like months or whatever, I go back and I see it and I remember exactly what I was feeling when I made it and what I was feeling when I was experiencing the thing that made me make it.
Yeah. You know? When did you first discover that art could have that power? Like, what was your first experience with that?
Yeah. I think maybe like a year or two before I moved to Rochester, that was when I like reunited with a friend of mine from Baltimore, and that was around the same time I also met Tiwa, and he's an artist. And I think once I started to like have more, like I started to hang out with him a lot in his art studio, and we would have like conversations about his art and like his thought process, and I started to think about my own like life and my thought processes and how I used to you know, make art here and there, but nothing too serious, nothing, you know, like the year before I was in like a super horrible relationship, and I was like making little things here and there, painting here and there. And he was also an artist, the person I was dating, and I felt like I was doing it like in secret away so he wouldn't see it or judge it. And I stopped completely until I met my friend, his name is Wally, and I started to kind of just be in like the presence of all of his work and like his art. And then I started to think about my stuff again and how much I really do like doing that stuff. And now I can do it out in the open. I don't have to like hide anymore. And that was when I really started to like do things that like spoke to me. Yeah.
That's really beautiful.
Yeah. I mean, it's really interesting to me when, you know, we start out saying gore and color, right? And it sounds so flippant. It sounds so like, oh, you're just into horror movies and you just want to be extreme and you just whatever, right? Or like there's some weird hidden psychological thing that you don't want to talk about.
Hey, that's cool too. Come on. Cool.
Hey, by all means.
That's still cool.
I'm not judging. But, you know, it's interesting to get a little bit further. And really it's like tapping into the pure weight of the human experience. Like there's just a depth of feeling that you tag into, you get into, that is like, you know, a grief that is your unique grief given that specific story. But like grief in general is like such a human emotion that someone can look at your work and
feel it,
find their path to that or find what they have experienced with that. Or maybe they're turned off by it because they haven't touched it. You know, they don't want to go there.
Yeah.
But there's a certain gift to that.
But there's still a response to it, which is what makes it response. Art.
Yeah.
Someone's, my definition anyway, is like if something makes you feel something, art 100%. And your work 1000% does that.
Well, and you kind of briefly said in the beginning that like you don't make art very often.
Yeah.
Which sounds, tell me if I'm wrong or not, but it sounds like it's a little bit of an insecure point. Mm-hmm. But it's also, I see it as something where if you're going through such a depth process to pull out these intense emotions, like, of course it's going to take a long time to get stuff out. I mean, Molly, do you have some resonance with that?
You were talking about it. And when you said, like, I just haven't made art in a long time, I was like, yeah, me too, girl. Like, I also haven't made art in a long time. Yeah. And it's interesting, like, how we'll label ourselves artists or not based on that. Because it's like, it doesn't matter how long you go between making something. Like, you are an artist.
Yeah.
But I do resonate with that. It's like sometimes you have these seasons where you're just like, I will literally go to the easel and look at the painting and be like, no.
No, not today.
Still not. Do some of the more joyful emotions come through that same style?
Yes, actually. They do. I feel like when I'm, except that when I'm joyful and I'm in that joyful mood, I want to share that with people, and I'm not in solitary. I want to be left alone, and like I have to busy myself, or I'm like inspired to go and like do something. So I think most of that is the more rare part of like what I do. So it's not as often because I don't find myself running to go and make art when I'm like happy. When I'm happy, I'm thinking of like hanging out with like with Tiwa or hanging out with my friends or like whatever. I'm not in the mood to sort of be alone with myself.
Yeah.
Versus when I'm feeling solemn and I do absolutely want to be alone. And most of the time I don't even, you know, I will busy myself. I'll go to school. I'll go to lab or whatever. And it will be like 2 a.m. or 3 a.m. And then I'll get out of bed and I'll go and sit in the dressing room. And then I'm in there with my sketchbook and I'm doing the stuff by myself. Mm-hmm. So I think it just, there needs to be like a balance with me feeling happy and then going to do art as frequently as I feel solemn and going to do art.
Yeah.
So would you say that your artistic process is like a way for you to just process?
Yes.
Like a medicinal process for you to help with 100%, your feelings?
100%. Yeah. I feel like
because it's been the same for me.
I feel like for the longest time, I don't even describe it like that because I'm like, that's like, it's basically art therapy. You know, you could, but I just, I think about it that way now because I know it's so, so helpful. Mm-hmm. It's the same kind of like feeling I have when I am able to like journal like multiple pages all at once. And I'm like, I'm done with this. I'm done getting out this emotion. And then I don't journal for like 6 months.
Yeah. That's a vibe.
Yeah, no. 100%. And I'm like, this is... this is, I know this is how I see it, and I'm happy with this, with this flow. Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Yeah, yeah. I'm really curious, too, about this juxtaposition a little bit between...
Let's get a sound effect.
Yeah, that was a lot. Yeah, juxtaposition. Nice.
Juxtaposition. Nice.
Yeah, that was...
And speaking of that's juxtaposition.
What happens when thoughts leave my brain, that sound.
Well, I think I need to go journal for like 20 pages.
Yeah.
And then we're going to get to Christian's question.
Yeah, let's do that.
When we get right back.
All right.
Oh, yay.
Hi there. This is Magnus of The Mind of Magnus, a show dedicated to help expanding the mind that I have in this big skull of mine. I've grown up with the love of factoids and curious about the world, so I'm taking the time to interview all the most amazing people I've met. So join me for The Mind of Magnus. You can find it at magnusapollo.com. And if you have a guest, you want to be a guest, you want to learn more about what's going on in this world, please join me here on the Lunchador Podcast Network.
So I keep following this thread of gore and colors. I don't know, just the beautiful contrast of that is wonderful. And the fact that we spent a little bit of time talking about, you know, what we jokingly called this art therapy, sort of this depth work of grief and emotion, the heavier emotions that require you to be on your own to process. Mm-hmm. And then there's this other side, there's the colors side. Mm-hmm. And I think I heard you say that some of it was about maybe making that more, I don't know if accessible is the right word, but there's like a brightening up of it to make
appealing,
palatable, something that's just like, you can take it in. Mm. And I'm curious about this other side of like the joyful part we talked about a little bit too. But when you're feeling joyful, there's this like, you want to be with your friends and your partner and out in the world. Mm-hmm. Is there art that comes through that in terms of more of a collaborative opportunity? Mm-hmm. Or have you thought about that or played with perhaps like when you're dealing with the heavier emotions or needing to process, mm-hmm. that stuff comes through alone when you're in your dressing room sketching. Mm-hmm. But when you're with other people and you're feeling that lightness and joy, are you still feeling compelled to make art? Mm-hmm. And are you exploring what that looks like, the kind of the color side, for lack of a better way to put it?
Yeah, I think maybe not, my paintings or drawings type of art. I think I like to consider myself multifaceted. So mm-hmm. I like clothes and mm-hmm. I do like putting things together.
I love your styling so much.
Thank you.
Talk about art. Like, yeah, let's get into it.
Yeah. So when I'm in that mode, Tiwa is like my partner in everything. Like, we get dressed together, and I feel like maybe in the beginning he like completely hated me because I'm always like giving my opinion that nobody asked for. Like, why are you putting that together, why are you wearing that?
But I don't know anything about that. That's not how I live my entire life.
But I think now it's a bit more like collaborative, and he would like absolutely put things together like for me, or like give me one thing that's gonna like put together my everything. And I like to think of the way I dress as like a form of like expression as well. Mm-hmm. So I think that form of art, it's kind of collaborative in that way. Other than that, I would really love to like collaborate with like people mm-hmm. and make things that I see other people's artwork, and I see their essence in it, and they're mm-hmm. happy and they're playful and they're cheery and they're beautiful, and I want to be like a part of it as well, except I don't know how to do the collaboration thing because I kind of think of my own art as like, you know, this is like an extension of me, and mm-hmm. I don't know if you're going to be into that, but you know, I would like to do that. I would like to do that and like collaborate and make something that is actually really cool, but not like a downer. I don't know. Like,
dude, maybe we could collaborate. Why don't we collaborate?
We could collaborate. I would like to collaborate. I feel like your art is like super explosive and colorful as well.
Thank you. Yeah. And I just love layering shit.
Yeah.
Like, yeah. So I think, and that's as easy as it can be sometimes. It's just like, I don't know, your stuff's cool. It's almost like being a little kid in the sandbox being like, I like your shark.
You
want to
play?
You like my shovel? Can we play together? Yeah. You know,
Well, we kind of touched on that a tiny bit in the Erica Bryant episode. It's like, if you get a chance to go listen to that, you should. It's about dreams largely, but it's this idea of like, sometimes we just don't have to overthink it. Mm-hmm. Like, sometimes there is a lot of depth, sometimes there's a great meaning to take from the work that we do, mm-hmm. but sometimes it's just like, you just want to look cool, or you just want to make something that looks cool, or you just want to dance and move in a way that looks cool. It doesn't always have to have some depth and intensity to it.
Yeah. And I'm kind of wondering, so I know, like, when I started to pay attention to the way I dressed, I always like to have a theme, and mine are fairly simple. It's usually a lot of color coordination, but there's colors that make me feel, if I'm feeling really happy that day,
yes,
I'll end up wearing.
He wears his pink.
I'll wear hot pink, like neon pink.
I love that.
Yeah,
because it feels to me, it's a very joyful color, right? Mm-hmm. You don't see it. No, people are like, they demonize it from a toxic masculinity perspective. Mm. But are there colors that are your joyful colors that you feel great either you know, portraying through art, or just like, hey, when I'm feeling good, yeah, I'm bringing this color.
Yeah. 100%. I love a yellow. There's this particular shade of yellow. I brought my sketchbook for you guys to if you ooh, care.
Yes. But oh my gosh, Tiwa's got Vanna White over here.
You will see, like, I reach for that color every time I'm feeling like, you know what? I have a, you know, it doesn't look like, you know, I'm in a good mood making this, but I'm just going to add this yellow just so people understand that this is not, it's not like they look distressed, but trust me, guys, the day is nice. The blue is blueing. Yeah. Everything looks great. For, like, clothing and stuff, you know, I really love patterns. And so, like, I do everything. Blues, florals, pinks, oranges. I really do. And I this is coming from a person that is always wearing black.
Yeah.
So I 100% get you.
Yeah.
When I'm happy, I'm going to throw on that scarf and I have like 36 different patterns on me. Mm-hmm. And then when I don't want to be seen at all, or like I'm feeling very laid back today, I'm going to wear all black or whatever.
Mm-hmm. And also what a beautiful thing, right? When you get those colors and like that contrast, mm-hmm, especially like when you're wearing it, right?
Yeah.
Like you get that beautiful contrast of those colors and patterns. Mm-hmm. Like, what a delightful thing.
It is so delightful.
Because you end up just smiling.
I see a person like that, and it's like, I want to say hi to you. You know, like, I want to know what your thought process is coming out the house looking like that today.
Yeah, because there's different motivations, right?
Yeah.
And like, I don't know. The other day, we've been moving offices for my job, and I knew it was going to be a day where I had to step up, and I had to move a lot of stuff. And most of the time, you think of like, you know, I'm going to wear something that's dirty and raggedy and just not bother. But I was like, I'm going to need a lot of motivation today. So I'm going to like get dressed
up. You like dressed up.
I dressed up proper. And like, I was like, no, I'm going to move stuff and look good doing it and feel good about it. Right.
And you did.
You know,
you did.
It's,
thank you for the applause, Brie. But like color has such an impact on how you feel or how something can be perceived.
Yeah.
You know, so like that color, especially with the contrast again, with like the gore or something else that's like, you know, I mean, do you either, and this is open to anyone, but like I will sometimes when I'm having a bad mental health day, will also wear color to like fake it just a little bit.
Yeah.
Like, cause I'm kind of inviting someone at that point to come and compliment me or to greet me and say hello or just like to cheer me up because I'm not doing it apparently enough for myself. So I need some help and I will lean into colors for that reason.
Mm-hmm. That's a great tactic.
Yeah. I dress up a lot for my job anyway. I have to, but like I do it a little extra and try to add like punk rock edge to it to make myself happy.
Yeah.
Cause I'm like, and I always say the same thing cause I'm in a nonprofit corporate environment. So people can sometimes have a tendency to slide into like the beige kind of dressing. It's like, oh, I'll just wear slacks.
Blend in
like,
with the walls.
And a polo shirt. And it's like, you guys are so boring. I'm like, it's fine. There's a place for it. But there's something about like colors and dressing and allowing yourself to really sink into that character. Like everything for me is like drag in that way. Like it's just like, today I am this corporate professional badass and I'm wearing my nails and I've got my doc boots and that's the thing. I'm wondering if your painting and pastel creations that you make ever intersect with like your fashion.
Oh, I don't think so. I've never actually thought about that at all. I feel like
is it something you'd ever consider?
No, you know, I think maybe I should. I should go back and like look at all of the color or like the color combinations I work with and see if I can make that happen in like my fashion. But no, I think when I started getting into colors, that was because I was literally forcing myself to step out of like just my monotone black and sometimes red you know like routine to not be afraid of color because I used to be like super afraid of like color and I'd always you know just like stick to the basics and try to make it as interesting as I can but now I feel like I'm doing color in like just the in a very compartmentalized way like I still think about how I dress and how I want to look and how I can incorporate color in there. But with like art, I kind of just like go crazy, which is,
and just let it be whatever
And I'm fine with that.
Yeah. Yeah. Do you choose colors like, are you the type of person who has color palettes in mind for your work, or does it, is it like, because for me, I'm like, yeah, that yellow looks really fucking good, and I'm just going to grab it and I'm just going to put it, like, it's yeah, more impulse for yeah, me. Do you have
same thing for me? I want to get better with my color palette, like, choosing, because you will obviously tell when you're working with acrylics, it's much different mm-hmm, than like you're working with pastels or whatever, because when the colors mix and they don't go together, you will get an ugly shade of gray or whatever
yep,
that you do not want. And I feel like sometimes it works because, you know, you don't really have a theme or whatever in mind and it can go. Mm-hmm. But I do want to get a better grasp of my my color palettes and mm-hmm, be able to use colors that absolutely go together. But with pastels, it's a lot easier for me because if I don't want it to blend, I just don't blend it.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Right. You just leave it.
I just leave it.
As it is.
Yeah.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Yeah. Acrylics are pretty finicky.
Very.
That way. It's yeah, like you can either make something really brilliant or it's like, oh, shit, I yeah, just pushed it right over the edge.
Just... if he had stopped 5 seconds before.
It happens to at least 50% of my work, I will yeah, say, at some point. This is why my acrylics have so many layers on them,
yeah,
is because I will push it too far. Mm-hmm. And then I will have a brilliant outcome, and then I'll just do a couple strokes.
Yeah,
that just,
and it's like, oh, my God.
Like, God damn it.
Yeah.
And that's one of the ones that ends up being in the corner that we don't make eye contact for a yeah, while. I'm like, all right.
I don't see you if you nope, don't see me.
Revisit this another time.
Uh-huh. Yeah. I mean, art's interesting in that way. It's this practice of like attachment and detachment in a lot of ways.
Yeah.
You know, you talked about
letting
not,
go.
You talked about the challenge of selling your art. I wouldn't yeah, say maybe it's a challenge or not, but it's like, you know, there's attachment to the work because of the personal attachment to the meaning behind it.
Yeah.
And it's tough to let that go.
Yeah.
You know, do you feel that way? Would you feel that way if it was like a piece that's just about colors and you're just, you know, maybe making a floral scene or something? Not yeah, that you do that, but you know what I mean? Like, do you feel like it would be easier to let go, or do you feel like there's a general attachment to mm-hmm, like art? I don't know if that makes sense.
I know it does. And the general attachment for me comes with like when I consider a thing absolutely complete, like it's done what I want it to do, or it's given me what I was expecting, you know, mm-hmm, from it. Other than that, I have a ton of incomplete stuff, like, or incomplete stuff. Mm-hmm. And it's just like laying there. And yeah, obviously if somebody said, oh my God, I like that, you know, well, actually it depends, but I would be fine with parting ways with it. Mm-hmm. I'm not like scared of like abandoning things. I abandon things all the time. Mm-hmm. I think it just happens to be a bit harder when I've considered a thing complete mm-hmm, and I consider it a thing that I've put in my everything into. Mm-hmm. And I think that's when it gets hard to like let go of stuff. Like when I sold my like very first piece that was at the yards as well, mm-hmm, I was so grateful that it was a print. I mm-hmm, remember that because I was like, oh my God, I really love this piece, and the original is in my sketchbook somewhere, mm-hmm, and I'm fine with like letting this go, but I would never be able to let go of this like
right,
thing that I've put in
the
here,
actual paper that you put the actual yes, marks yes, on yeah, in that yeah, moment when you were feeling that
yeah,
thing. Yeah.
Yeah.
It like carries power and energy with mm-hmm, it for sure. Yeah. I feel like sometimes when I've sold things, I have hesitated to sell them, or I've jumped at selling them based on the relationship I have with the person mm-hmm, who's asking.
Yeah.
Like someone will come into my studio and like have a connection to a painting and realize that they also went through a divorce or whatever mm-hmm, that's directly correlated to yeah, that emotion. I'm like, okay, you're going to be a good steward yes, of this piece.
Yeah.
Like you're going to appreciate it. But yeah, if not, it's harder to.
Very much. I think it's know, harder with like complete strangers as well.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. Yeah. You don't know where it's going.
You're going to treat this baby right.
You're going to put it in the light in that it deserves to be in.
Uh-huh. Frame it. Whatever yeah, have you.
all of that's so interesting. I've, you know, there's, we kind of talked about, there's a little bit of this smuggle throughout this episode, I feel like, where mm-hmm, it's a little bit about the belief of whether or not we're an artist. I mean, yeah, I've struggled with that. I've with calling myself an artist. We've talked about it numerous times, Molly and I. And I guess I want to ask bluntly, like, why don't you think you're an artist? Why don't you call yourself an artist?
I think I said sometimes, or maybe not. I do feel sometimes like I don't consider myself that because of, like, what I explained, like, the consistency.
Yeah.
I see people who do this full time, like, as a career.
Right.
As career artists, of course. I don't think that people who don't do this, you know, for money, or, like, don't, you know, do this full time or not artists, because I know plenty of people who I would consider an artist who also have the same sentiments, like, I'm not an artist. I think the title, just for me, sometimes carries, like, a responsibility. To be an artist, you have to sort of, like, live like an artist, like, authentically all the time. And sometimes when I'm out living my regular life in school or whatever, I don't necessarily see myself as that. I think maybe that's where that disconnect is. Like, I don't see myself as an artist all the time because I know I have a thing that I'm doing full time.
Yeah, I resonate with that.
Yeah.
Being, like, in a position where I am at now as the training specialist at Arc of Monroe, and I'm, like, doing staff training, and it's, I'm suddenly in this brand new world where I'm like, oh, I'm a corporate professional.
Yeah.
And, like, not doing art full time, which is a relief to me in a lot of ways, honestly, because sometimes putting monetary pressure on your art success is hard to do.
Well, but, and also, I think it's the other thing is when art is the thing that you do, and that is, you know, the focus, and you need it to survive, you're also sometimes struggling to go out and do the things that allow you to make the art.
Yeah.
To live the life that makes you an interesting, you know, person who has experiences that you can go off of. It is not just the internal or outside things acting on you. It's you're living a life that offers up opportunities to observe things, to have other people interact with you and find something that you wouldn't have found otherwise. Because it's, you know, it is the endless compromise of, it's nice to have a day job that allows you to do the other things and be comfortable, but it then allows you to have life experiences to do the next thing.
I totally agree. I do. I don't wish that I was doing art, like, full time at all, like, as a way for me to survive, because I think that would ruin, like, a lot of my kind of attachment, or, you know, how I feel towards my art. I don't think I would like it at all.
It kind of did that for me, and it's weird because Instagram makes it look otherwise, because you know? It's just like the highlight reel, but for me, I got to a place where I was just so sick of it, and it wasn't fun for me anymore. It's like, if I do anything that's supposed to be a fun, creative passion project, like this podcast or like whatever art that I'm making, I want it to be something that I'm excited about. And it's got to be exciting and interesting and dense enough for me at this point in time, working 40 hours a week. And, like, it's got to be worth my while. You know? So it's like, nice to not have that pressure. Because then, you know, you do all this other badass stuff, right? Like, you work in a lab and you're a grad student. Like, you don't have a whole lot of time on your hands, right?
I think it's, and it's only going to get harder from now on. But when I do that, I think of, like, I give myself time limits with that too. I don't like to and, you know, if I have to stay in, if I don't have to be in school today, I will not go to school today. If I
schedule
don't have to
your priorities.
Very much so. I'm very strict about that. I do think I need to, you know, maybe, like, ramp it up a little bit, spend more time, especially once I, like, you know, settle in a lab, in a thesis lab. I obviously would want to work towards that, so I can be able to graduate and leave when I want to. But other than that, I do not like to overextend myself in that way at all, because I like to come back to my real life, as I like to call it.
I mean, if there's, like, an emerging theme with all of this, it feels just like the human part of expression and creativity. Because I've been a creative service person for 20 plus years now, doing, like, graphic design and video production and all this stuff. And that's the other direction I came from the capital A artist thing, is that I am being paid to create. And I have been doing that for a long time, but I'm not as much of an expressive artist. I've become that more and more over time. I have a lot of writing and have done some drawings and things like that. But this, hearing all of this and hearing your relationship to art directly is a beautiful thing. And, you know, Molly's resonance with this too has been really great to hear. So,
I'm happy to hear that, because I do consider you like a career artist as well.
Thank you. I still do too. I think, but it's interesting going back into that world. I know what you're talking about, like having a full-time job. Mm. That's your day job, quote unquote, that you might still find a lot of purpose in. Like, I find a lot of purpose in my job, but also being like, okay, well then what does that look like if I'm not just writing a blog and shipping work and making art content and painting every day? You know, like, I went like 3 weeks without painting. Mm-hmm. Today was the first time I painted in like almost a month.
Oh.
But it's just like giving yourself the permission slip to just do it on your schedule and do it the way that you like it, you know?
Well,
like,
and there's something that in your approach, Molly, to art that I've heard over time, like having been together for 7-8 years now, like your relationship to art.
You must really love me by living in Rochester this whole time.
Yeah. So yeah. I'm trying to make otherwise happen.
He was in San Diego before.
I was. Don't remind me.
Sorry.
But your relationship to art is interesting in that your relationship as an artist isn't necessarily about you being a consistent, persistent, professional artist being paid for all of your work, though you've wrestled with that. What you communicate to me often is how you're going to be perceived after you're gone. Like, what is your life going to be perceived as? What is your contribution to existence in a lot of ways? And that, when you talk in those terms, that's when the artist part of you really comes through. You reference Georgia O'Keeffe a lot. You reference artists that are like, you've told me like,
My whole life is art.
And that's in a way that what I'm trying to get to is like the expressiveness of like being alive, being a person, being a life is a creative, expressive experience. Mm-hmm. And through that, you talk actively about like when you're working in your journals, like you've said, you know, maybe one day somebody will find these journals and they'll try to interpret what my experience was like. And they'll, you know, I'm sure they'll come up with their own stories about what my life was like or whatever. But like, you hope that it's as accurate as possible to your story. But I mean, can you just kind of briefly speak to that feeling?
I hope that people have all kinds of wrong ideas about it, actually.
You want them to come up with a whole grand myth about you now?
Yeah. It's so much more fun.
I think I'm more of a performance artist in that way, actually, where I'm just like, because my journals are not complete documentation at all. It's just like, and that's why I love reading through them, because it's like, what
I love reading through my own, too. It's like huge entertainment gaps for me. Like, what happened between there and there?
Right.
Yeah.
See, so much fodder for speculation.
Well, I gotta say, like I'm the opposite, right? I deleted almost all of my old emails and all the stuff that I like, the history of me talking to, you know, editors and me talking about the stuff that I was doing at the time. I deleted all of it recently because it didn't feel like me anymore.
Mm-hmm.
It
mm-hmm.
didn't feel like the me I am now.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
And I'm like, why am I keeping this? This isn't relevant to me anymore.
Mm-hmm.
Which is why I also love being around creative people because, you know, my wife's a creative. Being around more creative people offers those different perspectives to me as like, hey, I'm telling a story. I hope people misunderstand later. Right. That's awesome. That's fun.
And I think your story also reminded me of the point that, like, I feel like the real test for me if you're an artist is if it doesn't matter how often you make the work, it's you can't help it.
Yeah.
It's the fact that you can't help it. It's like you just, you got to make something with something. At some point, whether there's like months or years that go between those things, there's always this like bubbling up of energy that comes and you're like, oh, I gotta make this thing that just dropped in my head, you know? So if you, as we're like wrapping up this beautiful conversation that we've had, thank you so much for coming on the show.
It was really, really good. Yes.
If you could give the listeners out there some sort of permission slip, what would you tell them?
You know, the thing that you're like super afraid of doing for like whatever reason, you're scared it's not gonna work, or you're scared people are not gonna like it, or whatever, just like start it today. Like, do one thing today that is going to be in like this entire, you know, this giant bubble, like this giant thing that you wanna do. Just do one thing today that's gonna be a part of it. And so you remember that you started it like now instead of later.
Mm-hmm.
'Cause you keep pushing it, you keep pushing it, you keep pushing it. Not now. Now is not the time. It's coming. I'm gonna do it later. You will regret not starting it now. Mm-hmm. And I'm speaking like from experience as well. Just start it now. Just do it. Just do it.
Just
you know,
do
they
it.
They really had it right with that one.
Just start. Yeah. Okay, you win this one.
You win this one, Nike. But you can't take everything. Prestige. Super grateful for you being on the show. Just grateful for your perspective and willingness to share the depth of that experience and to play back and forth with us around like the artist identity and expression and all of that. Because I just think of, sometimes there are young artists listening, sometimes there are peers, you know, and people that are making. And I always say we're talking to creators, not customers. And it just feels like this was a great opportunity to bring you to them. So thanks for sharing yourself.
Cool. Yeah. Thank you, guys.
Mm-hmm. Thanks, Davida.
This has been a presentation of the Lunchador Podcast Network.
Just wanted to shout out an artist that's on the walls here in the studio. If you see videos, you'll see this sign in the background from No Fun Zone. Shout out to Susie. No Fun Zone Arts and Junk, ARTZN Junk. Check them out. They're doing really cool work around Rochester. Thanks for listening.